You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to a special edition of Backstage with Burgoyne and Brage. I am John Brazier. I am in Clearwater, Florida, and in Philadelphia, not so sunny Philadelphia, is my co-host, Tom Burgoyne. How you doing, Tom?
John, you call that an open?
Well,
I usually put a little bit more oomph into it, but okay, you know.
Yeah, I'm sitting here, Tom, next to like the most chill guy in the world, Ricky Jordan, so I'm trying to be cool. I don't want to be over enthusiastic. You know what I'm talking about?
You're with Ricky. John, you're killing me, first of all, that you're down there. I'm up here. I know how much fun fantasy camp. I mean, it's always a blast. I know you go every year. I don't go every year. I've been down there a couple times. So it's kind of killing me, but I'm glad we're keeping the podcast alive. This is a great idea by you. You brought the equipment down there, knowing that, you know, we've got some guys always get together this time of year. So this is great. Can't wait to talk to Ricky and you guys.
Well, and Ricky's been a big part of Fantasy Camp. Let's welcome him in. Ricky, how you doing?
Good, doing good. How you doing, Brace? Tom, how's it going, buddy?
Doing good, Ricky.
You know, he's complaining, Ricky, and little did you know that we're down in sunny Clearwater, which it is actually nice out today. But Tom just got back from Punta Cana, Dominican Republic, so I'm not feeling too sorry for Tom Burgoyne.
Yeah, so he's enjoyed some good weather over there then, so he can't be complaining. Oh. But I did hear it was pretty cold up there, up on the East Coast, up there, up high, up there, probably 12 degrees or so, I heard, maybe.
Actually, even lower. I took my daughter skiing last weekend, and it was freezing.
Wow.
Yeah. So not good. So, Tom, as you know, we interviewed Ricky at the Darren Dalton event. We had an unbelievable interview. We got into everything. Even if we didn't, nobody will know the difference because the interview got erased when we had a power outage at Huntington Valley Golf Course. And, you know, somehow we got Dave Holland's interview in there, but Ricky didn't. So this is part two. So he has an inside advantage. He's already said, are you going to ask the same questions on the quiz? And you know what, Tom? I mixed it up a little bit. So, you know, I think. I have no idea what I did yesterday. So how do I know if I mixed it up?
You're going to be throwing it for a loop. All right. Yeah, Ricky, that's, you know, I know we saw you at Darren Dalton and, you know, the darn electricity. I always blame John whenever there's a technical problem with one of our podcasts, but it turns out it was more of an electrical issue we had no control over. So we appreciate you coming back on with us.
No, I'm glad to be back again. Yeah, that was kind of weird, though, that it just kicked out of there and then came right back. But I'm glad to be back on here with you guys, Tom.
Well, let's talk about Fantasy Camp. Ricky, you're a big part of it. Now, for those that don't know, Fantasy Camp is usually around this time, around the third week of January. It's down in Clearwater. It's for 5 days. You stay at the Marriott Sand Key, and you get a uniform, you get a locker, you get on a team, and each team has two legends. So we have 10 teams, so there's 20 legends. And there's – well, Ricky, tell who are all the legends that – and it must be fun for you to see all these guys. Talk about some of the legends that are down here.
Well, of course, you have John Kruk down here, Mickey Morandini.
The commish.
Milt Thompson, Von Hayes comes, Dave Hollins. I mean, there's quite a few of them down here.
Chris Coast,
Mariano. And it looks like we got
two new guys.
Randy Wolf.
Wolfie, yeah.
And I'm not sure of the other one.
You got – do you remember who's smashing the center field with his face?
Aaron Rowan.
Yeah, Aaron Rowan is new this year.
A couple new young guys down, which will help out on the Sunday game because some of us are getting pretty old.
Yeah, because all the campers will play against the legends. So who are you? Now, this is on a more of a sad moment is that I know you were – they always pair a legend together, and for many years you were paired with Real Cormier. And unfortunately, Real passed away last March, and I know we're going to honor him this year down here. Talk about Real Cormier.
Yeah, what a great guy. I mean, the first couple years he came down here, I was paired with him, and then they changed this up. I think Matt Stairs came down, and they put those two together because they're both French-Canadian, which is great. You know, I mean, it was great. But being with Real the first couple years was awesome. I mean, what a great family guy. Love the game. Good person. You know,
yeah,
what
wicked
I mean?
Sense of humor too.
Yeah,
he's somewhat quiet, but he had a. He could get you with the best.
He can,
of them.
Yeah, and he could be funny too, and he could be serious. But we talked a lot about his family, so yep. He was really, you know, into his family. He come down for this, but then he was skiing a lot. He did a lot of things. Great, great guy. I mean, it's just unfortunate that that happened to him. I didn't even really know that he was sick. You know, what I mean,
I don't think he told a lot of people.
That's what
you know,
I think,
and he looked always so healthy, and he ate healthy, and I tell you, he's one of the most. I mean, obviously, to make it to the major league level, you guys all have to be phenomenal athletes. Real kind of took it to another level. He was, I don't know if you knew this or not, but he was a badminton champion. He grew up in New Brunswick province. He was a badminton champion when he was a teenager. So then he becomes a scratch golfer. As you said, skier. He moves out to Park City, becomes an expert skier. It's almost like he's one of these guys that no matter what he tries, he's an expert at.
Yeah, it's unbelievable because – actually, I guess he was a great hockey player when he was growing up.
Is that right?
Well,
I know Matt played. I actually played with Matt. I saw him on skates, yeah.
Yeah, they both played. Okay. So it's unreal that it's crazy that all the things he could do, you know, yep. And then end up being a Major League Baseball pitcher, you know what I mean? It's kind of weird. But if you look at him, he doesn't strike you as that athletic type guy. But, I mean, the guy was a good pitcher. He could pitch and he could play. But to be able to do all those different things, yep. You got to be athletic.
You know who else is a really good ice hockey player who's down here? Jim Eisenreich. Jim Eisenreich grew up in Minnesota, I believe, and he was a very good ice hockey player. In fact,
that.
He thought about, you know, taking that maybe hockey as a career as opposed to baseball.
Wow, I didn't know that, yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, Ricky, I have a question. You know, you mentioned, you know, you're getting old. You don't look it, by the way. We've, you know, seen it back in October.
By the way, Tom, he's our age, just to let you know. We're all
we all
graduated the same year.
but from a playing baseball standpoint, you go down there and you're expected to play, baseball 4 days in a row or so. And so is that tough for you? And how have you backed off? Like, do you play every day? Do you not throw as much? How have you kind of paced yourself down there so you're not pulling a hamstring every day?
Well, actually, down here, Tom, the first 3 or 4 days, we just kind of coach and maybe throw a little BP. And then we only play on Sunday. But sometimes that Sunday game is starting to be challenging too. And it's more like you said, it's hamstring for me because I do a little bit of stuff at home, bike riding and play a little softball with my son and them. But it's always hamstring because this baseball stuff's a whole different twitch with 90-foot bases and all this stuff. So I try to just keep my legs together and know my limitations out there on Sunday.
Hey, Tom, I got to tell you, he did have one injury 1 year. He had to actually go to the hospital for nothing serious, but it was he had to go to the hospital. And thanks to that, I was basically hanging out with that team because Governor Rendell was on his team. It was Real and Ricky. And next thing you know, I had to be put into emergency coaching service. And then they started losing players. So then I had to become into emergency playing service. And I haven't played baseball since Little League, so thanks to Ricky, you know, I basically had, I think I hurt my rotator cuff, which hurt me for about, you know, took me about a year to recover from.
Hey, do you guys use signs? Like, are there steals and, you know, takes and, you know, bunts and are there signs going on down there?
No, they don't do any signs, and you're not allowed to steal, so.
Okay.
And I got to say, JB filled in pretty good for me as a coach and as a player out there for us. He did pretty good for us.
A lot of pressure, Tom. I got to tell you got Charlie Manuel sitting behind home plate going, "Bridging, better not strike out. Come on." And I got a soft thrower thrown to me. And I said, Tom, I was never so happy to pop up. All I wanted to do was not strike out because I would never hear the end
contact.
Of it. I would never hear from the end of it from Big Chuck. So, and he's down here too. It's just so much fun down here. Michael Rouse, you know, who puts from ESF, puts together an unbelievable camp. I've got three of my buddies from manufacturers that are down here. We have a lot. And the beauty of it, Tom, is that I think about 55% are guys that come back. And there's a lot of guys that come back every year. Then you have obviously 45% are rookies. And they come from all walks of life. You have CEOs and doctors and lawyers. But then you have the blue-collar guys that basically save up their money and come down here. It's their big vacation. Everyone, you know, when they get on the field or get down here, they're all one family. And there's Ken.
Well, the one family, yeah. And, John, what I think is cool about it is, you know, you're treated like a ball player the minute you walk in the door.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, how to dress, how to, you know, prepare. And I know, Ricky, you've been involved in – you know, part of the fun down there. Not only do you get a chance to, you know, when you're a camper, hang out with the players, you know, afterwards and maybe have a cocktail or two, but I know the Kangaroo Court's a big thing, and I know you've been involved in that too.
Yeah, go ahead, Ricky.
Yeah, the
tell them your role.
Kangaroo Court is great. I mean, every now and then, I think one day out of the whole time we're here, I get to be a judge up there with Crucker and Mickey, and it's great. I mean, John Kruk's the best. You know, him and Mickey, they're the best up there, and it's just a great experience because a lot of people, you know, they get them for certain type of things that go on, going on down here.
Yeah, to explain that those that don't know Kangaroo Court, what it is in the morning, first thing in the morning, everyone gets their coffee and they go up in their uniform and they sit under a tent and there's a judge's bench and there's three judges and they have the old barrister robes and the barrister wigs and it's usually John Kruk or Ricky or Mickey or Scott Ayer or somebody and they're the judges. And so who's the defender? Randy Reddy.
Randy Reddy
is the defender. And so, yes, somebody will be called up to Kangaroo Court for a violation either on the field. They might have, you know, tripped over and did like four somersaults, or they might have, you know, banged into a fence or they might have, you know, stumbled coming home. Or most of the times it's off the field when they say something completely ridiculous, outrageous. They do so, you know, they wear their uniform out to dinner in Clearwater, something that's, you know, egregious, and they get busted on it. So then, you know, Ricky is sometimes come into defend them, right?
Correct. Or they might call me Milt Thompson instead of Ricky Jordan. You know what I mean? Sometimes that happens.
Someone
that's a violation.
Well, that and they were brought up to Kangaroo Court and they were basically eviscerated for about 10 minutes, right?
Correct. Yeah, and we listen to all the evidence and everything, you know, and Randy Reddy kind of defends them, and sometimes he might say, I can't defend it. You know, I got nothing. You know what I mean? He might not defend it, but it comes up to the judge's table, and we go over it, and Mickey, you know, he fines them $5 or $10, mm-hmm. or they'll get off or, you know, somehow. So it's pretty fun. It's real fun. I think their families and everybody enjoys it, and it's part of just having a good time at the camp, taking a little bit away from the baseball edge.
Tom, you know what the best part of camp is? And I'll give you a perfect example. So last night we were hanging out outside in the hotel, and Tommy Green was telling like 6-7 guys, and they're hanging on every word, and he's talking about, you know, coming up in the Braves system, and they were asking him what was Greg Maddux like? What made him so good? You know, Mickey was over there, and Mickey's talking about how he had, you know, how he could hit Greg Maddux, and then he was talking about certain pitchers that he couldn't hit, like some guys that didn't have great track records, but he just for some reason, you know, and that's where I think the beauty of fantasy camps is these guys get to ask questions to these guys that they've always wanted to ask, you know, and talk to Scott Ayer about pitching in the World Series, or, you know, talking to Ricky about all the, you know, the, you know, here's a guy that his first moment in the major leagues, right? You hit a home run. So I mean, just again, you can go back in history, and you're almost these 75-year-old guys are like, you know, little kids asking questions to these guys. So it's a lot of fun.
Oh, awesome. I got to get down there next year, John.
Yeah.
Coming down.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. You guys know I'm always up for a good MVP story, and one of the best stories is Wasabi Technology. Wasabi is the world's hottest cloud storage company, and it's become the go-to provider for professional and collegiate sports teams, including 20 Major League Baseball teams like the Red Sox and NHL teams like the Bruins and Vancouver Canucks. Even the Liverpool Football Club is getting in on the Wasabi action. So why is Wasabi the MVP? Well, Wasabi was purpose-built to free businesses from skyrocketing storage costs and unpredictable transaction fees that the Amazons of the world are charging. In fact, Wasabi is up to 80% less than those hyperscalers and doesn't charge a cent for businesses to access their data. From Wasabi's AI-enabled intelligent media storage, Wasabi Air, to the industry's only cloud storage service with triple protection against cyber criminals, data deletion, and ransomware, Wasabi's taking the lead in driving innovation in data storage and helping sports teams to unleash the power of their data. Wasabi, another Boston-based championship team.
Well, let's talk about Ricky's. Ricky, let's go back into your history. So I know you grew up in the Sacramento area, correct?
Correct.
And when you were younger, you were adopted, right? And that became your family.
Correct.
Talk about your childhood and then how you got into baseball.
Well, I was born in California in the Richmond area and ended up being adopted by a young lady by the name of Alice Neal. She was from Louisiana, and we moved to Sacramento. And I ended up living in Sacramento, playing basketball, baseball, football, everything there. But from day one, when I was 6 years old, I started playing all kind of sports. You know what I mean? She got me involved in all kind of sports. We didn't have much money, so she just let me go play. And then there was always that coach that kind of, you know, look after me, you know what I mean, being that I was a good athlete. And then I knew I had some mentors, too, in the neighborhood that would take care of me so I wouldn't get into trouble with the other group, you know what I mean. Ended up going to high school at Grand High and playing basketball, football, and baseball there and getting drafted out of there by the Phillies in the first round in 1983.
Did you think about other sports? Could you have thought about going to a next level in basketball or football?
I actually had a scholarship to go to Arizona State to play baseball and basketball. Hmm. And I really loved basketball. I actually thought I was going to be an NBA player, but
were you a guard, like a tall guard?
I was a swing guard forward at 6'3", and they go, that's not, you know, at the next level, that doesn't cut it. You need to dribble more, shoot more. You're a point guard, basically. But a funny thing happened to me. My sophomore going into junior year playing basketball, I was playing against Kevin Johnson, who used to be the mayor and the point guard for the Phoenix Suns. And I got a breakaway, went down to go up and dunk the basketball, jumped up in the air, and fell out of the air, just fell out of the air almost like somebody had shot me. And fell down, and my leg had broke right below my knee. Hmm. I had Oscar Slaughter. I grew too fast. I grew 7 inches over one summer.
Wow.
So bone hadn't
fully developed.
Yep. So ended up breaking my leg, came back and played again the next year, but the legs started bothering me a lot, running on the hardwood, playing football, so I got away from those two sports, and I think that's what made me concentrate more on baseball.
Hmm.
Yeah, and then, Ricky, you mentioned you got drafted in 83. Phillies are coming off the championship season that year. You know, coming from California, did you know anything about Philadelphia? Did you know anything about the team?
Yes, I did, because actually Larry Boa, who is from the Sacramento area, I used to follow him. You know, he went to McClatchy out there, so I'd follow him a lot. And of course, I knew Mike Smith. I mean, Mike Smith was one of my favorite players. Him and Reggie Jackson and
Vuk. Vuk from Sacramento too?
Vuk was from there too. Yeah. I knew more about Boa because a lot of the people, the coaches that coached me, they knew Larry Boa because they played against him. And they go, he's the feistiest little thing. They go, yeah, we can't believe this little gnat made it. I said, hey man, he loved the game. That's what helped him make it too. He had talent, but he also loved the game, and he was willing to work at it. You know what I mean? That's how you get there.
You know the infamous story. We had Larry Boa on our podcast, and I'm sure you'd probably know it too. When the Philly scout went out to California to watch Boa, he got tossed out of both games of the doubleheader. And so the scout came back, and they said, well, how was that kid, Larry Boa? I don't know. What do you mean you don't know? Didn't you go out there to see him? Well, yeah, but he got kicked out of both games of the doubleheader, right?
It sounds like Larry probably had a little bit of influence. Maybe you know, he was talking to some people at the Phillies thinking that you'd be a great prospect.
I would think so. Eddie Bachman was the scout out there at the time that signed me. And also Bill Robinson, who used to play with the Pirates. He was scouting and doing little things for the Phillies. So he actually came out to my house in Del Paso Heights and talked with me and my guardian. And he was talking about, hey, yeah, they're interested. This is before anything happened. They're interested in signing you for this, you know, to play, whatever. And, of course, my guardian, you know, she's from Louisiana, old school. She goes, what? They ain't going to pay this kid money to play baseball. I mean, they do that all the time around here. So she was going, nah, something's wrong with this. You know what I mean? So. Mm. But Boa, I would think Boa and all of them talked about it. You know, Boa knows the Sacramento area. We've had quite a few ball players come out of there and make it to the major league. So I would think he'd had some input on it. But, I mean, I had understood about the Phillies organization. I loved the organization. I mean, I heard about it a lot. I followed baseball a lot as a kid. You know, we would always watch Saturday baseball games and Twibs and all that. You know, you had everything back then. You could watch it. So I kind of watch a lot of baseball on TV.
Yeah, nice. And, you know, John mentioned it earlier. You had a memorable first at-bat, official at-bat, in 1988. That was your debut. What do you remember from your first at-bat?
Not your first plate appearance, your first at-bat.
Well, actually, that first game up there, I remember talking to Mike Smith about it because that game that I started, Bob Knepper was pitching. And Mike Smith had talked to me the game before because Nolan Ryan threw the game, the first game I was there, Nolan Ryan threw, and Lee Ilian and said, "We're not going to break in like this kid." And I was like, "No, I want to play," because I had heard Will Clark had hit a home run off Nolan Ryan with his first at bat. So I go, "Well, man, I could do it too." And Lee Ilian says, "No, I'm not going to break in like that." So, of course, Nolan Ryan strikes out 16 that day. He goes about 8 innings, and him and Mike Smith are arguing at each other about the fight out. I go, "Ooh, man, I'm glad I didn't play today." So so here comes the next day. Bob Nepper's going to be pitching.
By the way, you're 1-for-1 in your quiz already, because that was part of the quiz. You're on your way.
That's great. So Smitty's talking to me about Bob Nepper the next day. He's telling me exactly how this guy pitches. He goes, "He's going to pitch you kind of like me because they think you got power. You're a first baseman." And he's going to do everything like that to you. And I said, "Okay." So actually, the first plate appearance, I get up there, and he's kind of nibbling, just like Smith said he would. Nibble with a change, curveball here, fastball here. He's nibbling, and he walks me for first plate appearance. So then I come up for the first official one, and he throws the same sequence. It was a fastball away, change up, and then he throws a curveball, and I was waiting on it. I mean, I got to say, I was waiting on it. He hung it right there, and I just belted it to deep left for a 3-run homer. And I tell you, that was quite an experience. I was floating around the bases. I mean, it was amazing.
And Schmitty must have been proud, too, because he basically kind of told you the game plan, right?
Yeah, he was. I came back and sat down on the bench, and he came over and gave me that pat on the shoulder, you know, like,
"Good job.
Well done, son. Yeah, you know what I mean? I loved it. I was like, but I'm sitting there like going, "Did I really just do that?" Yeah. You know, and I want to tell you a little thing. After the game, they had me put up at the Best Western over by the hotel. So, of course, I, you know, got a cab to the yard and everything. So, after the game, Smitty goes, "Meet me out here, you know, go through this room and come down out of the boiler room and this room, and my car's sitting over here," you know what I mean, because he never had his car in that lot. So I do all this stuff, go through everything, and I come out, and there's this black BMW sitting over there. Get in the car with him, and I'm going, "Holy cow, this is nice." Drives me over to the Best Western and says, "Good job tonight," drops me off. I'm walking in the hotel, and people are watching on the TV. The sports were on. And it showed me, and I went, "Holy cow." You know, nobody really knew me.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm walking through, and I look and see that, and I go, "Man, that's amazing." It was just a blessing, you know, to see that. I said, "Man, that's actually me. I finally made it up here, you know. Thank you, Lord." You know, that's what I said. So
that's great. And just, you know, and Tom, if we can even go forward to that 93, you know, we always go to the 93 season, and a lot of the guys are down here, right? You've got a lot of your teammates, Tommy Green, obviously we mentioned, and Izzy and Milt Mariano.
Crocker, yep.
So, I mean, what was that like? I mean, yeah, at this point now you've been in the leagues for a little while, and right? And you got that, and we were talking last night. It's you, Mickey, Kevin Stocker, and Jim Eisreich were the four I didn't know Tommy at the time. Tommy was intimidating because of his size, but, and I'll throw Tommy in there now, were maybe the four or five normal people on that team.
Exactly. I mean, it was so many throwbacks and difference on that team, but we were probably the only five that were normal. You had your own little row down there. Mickey was actually in that row, and he was a normal guy there. But what a great season. I mean, after being with the Phillies for so long and then losing all the time, you know what I mean, and then all of a sudden here comes 93. And you know how baseball is. It's so unpredictable. One year you could be dead in the water, and next year you're on top like we were. So but just a great year, great experience. Darren leading us the whole way, you know, on and off the field, and everybody just playing so well. So many different things happening, that, you know, in that season. I mean, guys hitting grand slams off Lee Smith late in the game. Thompson jumping up over fences, catching balls, and he's probably, 5'10", you know what I mean? He reaches over fence, but just a lot. And Mickey with double plays, just so many things worked out for us that year, and it was just a great, unbelievable year. Never forget that year. I mean, I wish we could have took the whole thing, but it was great to get into the series that year.
Yeah, and Ricky, the you know, it all started, and we talked about this on the podcast before, but I just think it's so cool in that it really did start that season in spring training. And a big part of that was, you know, Dave Hollins' edict to the team. You know, he had gotten hit more than any other player the season before. And he really laid the gauntlet down with our pitchers, saying, "Listen, you know, if you don't start protecting me, I'm coming after you." And, you know, Tommy Green plunked somebody in spring training that year. And then you got plunked, I guess it was the St. Louis game, and that started a bench clearing brawl, right? But you were kind of in the middle of that.
Yeah, and I'm a pretty easygoing guy. You know, I was just out there to have some fun and play baseball. And Dave put a warning out to the pitchers because he got hit a lot. He got hit quite a bit. And he says, hey, if you guys don't start protecting us, I'm going to come after you guys. And next thing you know, that changed the whole attitude. I mean, but then you had Curt Schilling, who had a little attitude. He kind of stepped in there, and DJ too. And they said, hey, we don't care how we play. We're going to start protecting guys and get a little edge to us and let these teams know that they're not going to just run over us when we come in just because we've, you know, lost so many games in the past, you know. And I think that's what happens. A lot of teams think because you're a loser, they can come in and just beat over you any kind of way they want, you know what I mean? And I think that really set the tone in spring training to let them know that, hey, we're coming after people this year. And like you said, they hit some people. I got hit. I think Wes got hit. A couple people got hit before me. And actually, then they hit me, and I just said, okay, if nobody's going to do anything, I'm going. And I charged the mound, you know what I mean? I said, and that kind of set the tone, you know what I mean? When you got guys telling you, hey, we're going to be tough this year, I think it came into everybody. And it got to me, you know, as a nice guy, and I just charged the mound.
Yeah, and Ricky, just the chemistry on that team. I mean, you know, that, something like that happens, and then, you know, spring training, and then, you know, throughout the season, you know, it's kind of legendary how, you know, guys would hang out after the game in the trainer's room, you know, till the wee hours of the morning, just talking about the game, and just you guys really bonded as a group. What do you think was the reason you guys all bonded the way you did?
Well, I think it started with Darren, you know what I mean, wanting to actually win. You know what I mean? He'd been around the Phillies for a long time, and I think they won early when he first came up, you know what I mean? But after that, it was you're just laughing stock, you know what I mean? The league laughed at you when they came in there, and I think he was tired of getting bullied and wanted everybody to focus a little more on the game because he realized that we had the talent in that clubhouse to compete in that East, in the East against the Mets, and probably the Cardinals, you know what I mean? He knew we could compete, and I think he wanted us to get a little more focus on the game too and realize, you know, hey, if you make this mistake, let's try not to make it next, you know, the next night or so, you know. But if you're going to make a mistake, let's get in there and dig in there and be dirty about it. And, hey, if it happens, it happens, because baseball, you're going to make mistakes, you know, it's part of mistakes. But I think with him after the game – in the locker room and going into the training room with Kruk and all of them, everybody come in and have a beer. I mean, had everybody in there. You know what I mean? It was a big-time thing for all of us to join together and come together.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
But you guys really were a team because, you know, in any championship team, you know, whether it's the 2008 Phillies or, you know, going to any other sport, every player on that roster has to contribute. And you have to have guys come up from the minor leagues, you know, that contribute. So, and you guys especially, you know, you guys had so many players that were in the platoon roles or, you know, on bench roles that were, you know, integral part of that success, right? You included. I mean, yeah. There was, you know, when you had Wes Chamberlain and you had, you know, Mariano Duncan and you had, you know, Kim Batiste, and there's so many different people that really played key roles on that team.
Yeah, and that's true, John. Everybody kind of had a role, and they did their role real well. You know what I mean? They participated in everything that went on out there and also worked hard at the game and knew their role and was ready when it came time for them to step in. They were ready to go. So just good relationships, and I mean it, and just working at it, you know, knowing what's going on out there at all times, knowing that you might have to step in because we had injuries to certain people that year, and people stepped in and did the job.
And then you had Fregosi and you had Johnny Padres. And, I mean, that coaching staff was old school. Vuk and Boa, and right? I mean, that was – you had Menke, right? Was Menke the coach, right?
Yes, Menke, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you had some old school guys. I mean, you know, to me as a young PR guy, I was in 94, I was completely intimidated by not only the guys and the players, but the coaches, including the trainer, including the clubhouse guys. So.
Yeah, those guys, they take it back to the old school days, you know what I mean? And that's kind of the way they were teaching it. They were already gritty anyway, and they were trying to get us to get a little tougher out there, you know what I mean? But they put it on us and then put it on Dalton. And Dalton transferred it all to us because he was the leader, you know what I mean? So, but, yeah, those are great coaches. And I think Mel Roberts actually might have coached first base one year with us, if I remember. And I think it might have been that year he got up there. Just for one year. He had been in the minor leagues for a long time coaching, and he finally got up there. But that staff, awesome staff, willing to work with you on anything when you were struggling with anything. They'd show up early, work with you. There's a lot of things I wanted to work on. You know, I wasn't hitting at one time and went through some little fielding things. You know, and Bull would always come out and hit ground balls at me, him and Vuk. You got to get better at this if you want to play more. You know what I mean? Play on the defensive side more. We know you can hit, but defensively, you got to play better. You got to play better, or John's not going to have you out there in critical situations. He got to take you off the field. You know what I mean? So,
which is so different from how they're teaching kids now. You know, the tough love aspect is gone, and now it's kid gloves and, you know, come on, the cheerleader type.
Exactly. Yeah, they just baby them up. You know what I mean? And nothing. You know, I don't want to be critical, but it's totally different now. I mean, they can kind of do what they want to do. You know what I mean? There's no remorse or anything for it. You know what I mean? They kind of go out there, play, hey, okay, so what? You know, if this happens, it happens. But it's just a different era with them, though. You know?
Yeah. And Ricky, I mean, the postseason, obviously the party in Pittsburgh and then another party in Philly after we clinched against Atlanta and then going – to Toronto, any specific memories about what that postseason experience was like?
It was awesome. I remember in Pittsburgh, because I was actually on the bench that night, and I just remember, and I can't think of the pitcher's name. I could picture his face, but I can't get the name. They caught.
So I should have had that as a quiz question.
caught that ball and threw it over the Crucker in Pittsburgh when we clinched. And I'm looking.
Oh, Roger Mason.
No,
Roger Mason.
No. Wasn't. I think it was. Man, I'm looking at his face. Give me another right-hander. He came over out of nowhere throwing I can't think of his name. Came over out of somewhere. Man, who was this guy? He threw a split or whatever. But I think it was a ground ball back to him, and he threw over to Kruk that night in Pittsburgh and clinched it, and we all went out. I mean, and it was crazy in the clubhouse. You know what I mean? We were ecstatic about that. And, you know, here we are knowing that we got to go on and play the Braves, but so what? We were like, bring them on, you know what I mean? And I remember, to move a little forward, playing the Braves, I remember when they had to come to us because we had won it, you know, so they had to come to us, and I know we won the first game, and I think the second game, they might have beat us, and I remember Ron Gann or somebody saying something to us, saying, well, you Philly fans, say goodbye to your team because they won't be back here because it was three going back to Atlanta. You know what I mean? They were saying they were going to sweep us over there. And I just remember that. That was one thing that stuck out in my mind. And then once we came back and beat them, I was just so happy to show them that, hey, this is what happens to you when you talk that trash, you know?
That's great.
They were labeled, you know, the America's team. And, you know, we were America's, most wanted. The way the national media played up that team was just awesome. You know, Kruk going on Letterman, and you know, it was unbelievable. I don't know if there'll ever be another team like it. Hey, Ricky, I think I have the guy who made that last out. Was it Don Paul?
You got it. That's
wow,
it.
Look at you.
You got it. I knew. I could picture the face, but the name was just so different that I couldn't remember it. That's who it was.
Well, then, Ricky, you also had, you know, the legendary, he's not on the team, wasn't a coach, but he was part of your team in every aspect, Harry the K. What was your relationship with Harry the K?
Oh, man, you're talking about unbelievable. This guy, I mean, first of all, as an announcer, I mean, one of the greatest there was, you know what I mean? Everybody knew Harry K from, I don't care where you were from, you know, but overall with him, I mean, one of the nicest guys to me. I mean, I just loved his calls. I still got video of hitting home runs with him calling my home runs and stuff and just listening to him, man. What a great guy.
Did he have a nickname for you, or was it just – I can just picture him saying, Ricky Jordan.
That's how he said it. He didn't have any nicknames for me, but that's what he would say, though.
Yeah.
Yep, it was. He's great. Wow. I mean, unbelievable guy. Never forget that guy. I mean, how can you? You know, I mean, everybody loved him. I mean, he did everything. He did your Eagle stuff. He did all kind of other stuff too. You know, so great guy. Great voice. Unbelievable guy.
Well, I when I think of Pittsburgh too, Ricky, there's the highlight film where they show Harry, you know, leading everybody in high hopes in in the trainer's room, and it's just priceless video, you know.
Yeah, that is.
And Ricky, you said he had a great voice. He had a great broadcasting voice. I'm not so sure about singing voice, but
yeah. No, I agree with you on that.
Hey, I went to Lefty O'Doul's in San Francisco and saw him sing many songs at that piano, and pretty good. Although I guess my brain might have been a little mixed up while I was listening to him, but he sounded good at the time.
Yeah, everything sounded good at that point.
Right. Yeah. Right.
All right, John. Are you going to administer the quiz that you gave Ricky about 3 months ago?
I was putting together the quiz, and I knew I had given Ricky a quiz, and I like to ask similar questions, but I tried to go different. But again, the way my brain works, I can't remember what I asked in the first time. So I don't know if I'm going to have repeat questions. But as I mentioned earlier, he's already one for one because he got the Bob Knepper. I threw that one in there, and then, which sometimes happens in the course of the interview, they answer one of the questions with not knowing it. So, but Ricky, are you ready?
I'm ready, JB.
All right, we got 8 questions, as you know, multiple choice. The bar is 6. You already have 1, so you really need to get 5. Tom, what does he win?
A free trip to Florida.
A free trip to Florida, right. And you get to play some baseball.
Sounds
put on
good.
A uniform and hang out with John Brazier. How about that?
Sounds good.
And by the way, before we get into the quiz, what was your relationship with the Fanatic? We never talked about that.
Kind of minimal, but, I mean, I loved him out there. He'd come over and do a little things to me every now and then when I was out on the field. But I loved the Fanatic. I mean, great guy. I mean, everything he did was crazy. I always loved the Lasorda stuff.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Him and Tommy Lasorda used to just, man, that was so funny to watch Tommy come running out there and chase him.
And that was real anger. That wasn't
fake. I know that. That's what I know
because
most of the time he does stuff with the umpires, you know, that's kind of set up. But that was legit stuff right there with Tommy.
Hey, Ricky, we didn't even talk about the Fanatic birthday party back way back when we were playing the Dodgers. You hit a grand slam in the 8th inning to beat the Dodgers, and I think you might have gotten under Tommy Lasorda's skin a little bit that day.
Yeah, I remember that. That was against the late, God bless his soul, Tim Cruz, who got killed in that boating accident. I remember the home run, too, yeah. I do remember that.
Wait, hey, Tom, before we get to the quiz, I know the Fanatic always imitates when Dan Baker does the lineups, the Fanatic always imitates certain people. You know, Chooch would have, I guess it would be a jockey, and he'd have Ryan Howard would stick his arm out like he's, like Babe Ruth.
Yeah.
Right? What was Ricky Jordan's?
Cool Papa, man. It was just Cool Papa.
Right.
It's just, the strut down the street, and nobody's cooler than Ricky.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, he had that little leg walk. It was almost like a cool leg walk out.
Wait, like Huggy Bear?
Yeah, kind of like that.
Yeah, Huggy Bear.
Yeah, it was like a walk. It was a walk. It was like a leg out strut walk. Yeah, it was. It actually was.
That's great. All right.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
All right. Well, again, we're going to go right to the quiz. Ricky, are you ready?
Let's do it, JB.
All right. Now, this could be a repeat, but your high school had a lot of celebrities. So you went to Grant Union High School in Sacramento, California, correct?
Correct.
Which celebrity did not attend that high school? Okay. A is former NFL receiver Dante Stallworth. B is former NFL running back Devontae Booker. C is Match Game 76 host Gene Rayburn. And D is All-American basketball player at UCLA Walt Torrance. So was it Dante Stallworth, Devontae Booker, Gene Rayburn, or Walt Torrance?
Gene Rayburn.
Gene Rayburn is correct. And you're our age, so you can appreciate Match Game 76 and all those wacky people on there. Sometimes I'll do this as the younger folks, and they have no idea what I'm talking about. So you are one for one. Here we go. You were born in Richmond, California, which you mentioned earlier. Which of these celebrities never lived in Richmond, California? Never lived, okay? Three of them lived in Richmond, California. One did not, okay? A, rapper Master P. B is Dale Swaim, former Major League Baseball player and manager. C is Peter Buck, who's guitarist for the band R.E.M. And D is Nadia Suleiman, who's Octomom. So was it rapper Master P? Was it Dale Swaim? Was it Peter Buck? Or is it Nadia Suleiman, Octomom? He's thinking right now, Tom.
Wow.
He's
wow.
I don't know where I don't know who he's eliminating in his mind right now.
I know Dale Swaim is from that area. I know him because okay. I know him already. I used to see him up there. It's Pinole, Richmond area. I know him, so he's not him. What's the other?
Rapper Master P, Peter Buck, who's in guitarist for R.E.M., and the lady who is Octomom. She had octuplets.
Let's go, Master P.
No, Octomom is not from Richmond, California. Never lived in Richmond, California. All right. That's all right.
How did you come up with Octomom? Like, he was in the news like 20 years ago.
Right. I was in the news 20 years ago. I have no idea. How do you ask that? Why do I put Soupy Sales in here? Right? Don't ask how my mind works.
Octomom sounds, it just sounds too easy. Too you easy. Know, that's why. But Master P. Oh, I thought he was New Orleans guy or whatever. Maybe because he moved out there.
Yeah, he might have been from there. All right, now we're going to get a little – it should be a little easier. Your first rookie season was with the Helena Phillies in the Rookie League, 1983, the year we all graduated high school. Which was not a teammate on your Helena Phillies team? Which was not a teammate, okay? A is Damon Dombeck. B is Mike Trachtenberg. C is Tom Newell. And D is Jeff Norwood. So is it Damon Dombeck, Mike Trachtenberg, Tom Newell, or Jeff Norwood?
Mike Trachtenberg.
And do you know who Mike Trachtenberg is? Yes. He works for ESF, works in the company that does fantasy camp. It was a test to see if you knew Mike Trachtenberg.
No, I know. And all those three guys, the other three, I remember their names.
So whoever I put in there, you're going to get.
Yeah, I remember that. That was my first experience in pro ball.
Yeah, man, you're going way back.
First time away from home. I remember all those guys.
Yeah, but Ricky, a lot of guys don't – I think a lot of players, when we give them that question, they have a hard time remembering who were their first teammates on rookie ball. You know, they have a hard time with it.
That was crazy, though, because, like I said, that was my first time away from home, and I was in Helena, Montana. You know what I mean? Come on. You know, a kid coming from Del Paso Heights going to Montana, and we had 40 guys on that team, and I'm going, what an eye-opener for me to see all these players here. And I kind of – I remember it was a bunch of them there from Texas and – Oklahoma and everywhere. So.
Yeah. All right. You are 2 for 3. What year did you have 75 RBI? Do you need the multiple choice? All right. He's shaking his head. He needs it. All right. 1989, 1993, 1991, or 1990? So 89, 93, 91, or 90. 75 RBI. In that year, too, you hit 285 with 12 home runs, if that helps you.
89.
89 is correct. He is 3 for 4. All right. You were drafted number 22 in the first round of the 1983 draft. Who was not drafted in the first round that year? Okay. That year, who was not in that draft? Okay.
First round.
In the first round. Dan Plesac, John Marzano, Temple Zone, Tim Belcher, Roger Clemens. So you have Dan Plesac, John Marzano, Tim Belcher, Roger Clemens.
Johnny Marzano.
Yes, because he was number 14, first round, 1984. A little bit of a trick question, but you got past that. You already got this one because I said you hit your first major league home run on July 17th, 1988, versus the Houston Astros. Which pitcher did you hit the home run off of? I was going to give you Bob Forrest, Jim DeShays, Bob Knepper, or Mike Scott. You hit one out of the park. So you are now 5 for 6, right? You have to get one more to qualify for your trip to Florida, of which you're already there. All right, number 7. You played in 521 Major League games, right? You played in 521 Major League games. How many games did you play left field, okay, out of the 521? He's giving me a bitter face, you know, like the bitter beer face.
He should. That's a stupid question, John.
I resemble that remark. You played in 521 Major League games. How many games did you play left field? Was it 25 games, 4 games, 19 games, or 11 games? I kind of like this question because he's, you know, that should be memorable playing left field, right? Is that a little nerve-wracking, Ricky, playing left field?
Yes. It was very nerve-wracking.
Take you back
scary.
To Little League. You don't want it hit to you?
Nerve-wracking and scary and everything, boy. I just can remember Wrigley Field when I flipped over the mound out there in left field, coming in on a ball. They got that pitcher's mound on it.
All right. Wow.
Oh, I hit it and flipped over. Oh, man, it was crazy. Their whole bullpen was dying laughing at me. You know, I was pissed, ready to fight their whole bullpen. let's see.
25-4, 19 or 11.
25's out, 19's out.
So now you got 4 or 11. You want Tom, you want to be a lifeline?
I'd go 11.
That's your lifeline right there if you want to use it. He's
okay, 11.
11 is correct. It's a good use of the lifeline. And you qualified for your trip to Florida. Yeah. And the last question, okay? With a minimum of 50 plate appearances, okay? That's the minimum of 50 plate appearances. Who had the highest OPS, right, on base plus slugging percentage on the 1993 team at .921? So with a minimum of 50 plate appearances, who had the highest OPS on the 1993 team at .921? Was it Kruk, Ruben Amaro Jr., Lenny Dykstra, or Darren Dalton? Kruk, Ruben Amaro Jr., Lenny Dykstra, or Darren Dalton? 921 OPS.
How many play appearances, Josh?
50. Minimum of 50.
Lenny D?
I'll let you on this one. Use another lifeline if you want.
Lifeline.
Tom?
Well, if you're talking only 50 at-bats, I mean, Ruben, when he came up, he lit it up. So I'd go Ruben.
You want to take his lifeline? Or do you want to stay with Lenny?
Minimum 50 bats. How many bats did Ruben get in 93?
Well, that's a big question right there. So you can stay with your initial gut instinct, or you can go with the lifeline Tom Burgoyne.
I guess I got to go lifeline, I guess.
You are correct. You trusted Tom Burgoyne, and it worked out for you. Ruben had a 921. Now,
wow.
I think his plate appearance was probably 52, so I had to cut right underneath that. But Kruk had a 905. Lenny Dykstra was 902. Dalton was 875. But how about that? Ruben, 921.
Wow, yeah, that's crazy.
Pretty impressive.
That lifeline's awesome.
Yes, he's pretty good. Yeah. Well, he's also, you know what, Ricky? He is in Philly, and we can't see him, and we have no idea what he's operating
okay,
with.
Okay, yeah.
But, you know, but the Fanatic's best friend is a man of integrity, so there's no way he would try to cheat us.
I am?
Yes, I think so.
It's all off the top of my head.
Yeah, he's been around the game a long time and seen a lot of Phillies baseball, so I would think he'd know quite a bit about it.
Well, Ricky, I really appreciate you doing this. Again, we tried the one time, and thanks for coming back. And are you looking forward to Fantasy Camp? Because we have it's just about to start. Tonight's really the first. We have a kind of an opening night, little dinner and cocktail hour, and then the games start tomorrow. Are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready. I'm looking forward to seeing all the guys. I understand we got a bunch of rules we might have to deal with here, you know, because of the COVID stuff.
But Mike Rouse did a great job as far as putting in the protocols and making sure this is going to be a safe and fun fantasy camp.
Yeah, it should be good looking at all the protocols that he's got going on. So I'm excited about it and looking forward to doing it, and appreciate you guys having me back on.
All right, the great Ricky Jordan. How about that, Tom?
Hey, thanks a lot. It's great catching up, and we'll see you this season, I hope.
All right, Tom. Take it easy. Thanks.
All right. Well, Tom, that was Ricky Jordan. It's always great. You know, I'll be down here with a lot of guys, and, you know, it should be a really fun trip. You know, all those guys that we mentioned, Dave Hollins, Izzy. You know, I saw Randy this morning at breakfast, and, you know, Scott Ayer last night, and Tommy's down here, and it's going to be fun. Kevin Stocker, and, you know, on and on. It's a blast. We have a lot of guys that are down here that come down every year. So it's kind of, you know, and we didn't have it last year. So I haven't seen a lot of these guys for 2 years. So it's fun, and it really becomes like one big family.
It's a great time. And like you said, John, I mean, without it last year. So, you know, they missed it last year. And that's kind of how I feel with our Phillies vacation. We do it every year, and we didn't have it last year. So as you mentioned, we were in Punta Cana in the Dominican, and it was just so great, you know, a lot of returning folks, you know, that come on the trip and not being able to do it last year. We missed it. You know, we kind of missed hanging out with one another. And, you know, it was just great having everybody back. And It's our extended Phillies family, you know, our Phillies vacation group. It's, you know, the fantasy campers, these folks become, really our friends.
Hey, Tom, were the Schott sisters there? Time.
Oh, the Schott sisters were there. Yeah, unbelievable, John. They're unbelievable.
Now, to explain to the listening audience who the Schott sisters are.
Well, the Phillies vacations, started back in 2009, which was great timing because the Phillies had just won the World Series, and here we had lined up to go on a cruise with our fans, a month later or a couple months later. And on that first cruise, when you're on a cruise, they always have kind of a drink of the day. Well, Catherine and Maria, they're sisters. They always come to all our Phillies outings, and they decided, hey, let's do a Schott. Our first night, at dinner on the cruise, and we made it a thing every night on the cruise. Well, for every trip since, and they go on the trips, to the ballpark trips, during the season, they go everywhere on every trip, every night. We line up the Schotts, and when I say line up Schott down, we had, 75 fans with us on this trip. They line up 75 Schotts every night on the bar,
They're not college age, correct?
No, they are not. No, they've been around for a while.
Don't get in trouble, Tom.
I'm not. But they're the sweetest ladies, the greatest fans. They throw legendary tailgate parties at the Eagles games. Every Eagles game, they're out there, and they have, four-course meal, chefs, and have a great time right in the Link parking lot. And, of course, they're, two of the greatest Phillies fans too. So the Schott sisters are the best. We love them.
Great. Awesome. Well, again, this is a great show. And, Tom, who knows? I'm going to start working on some guests for our next podcast.
Yeah, well, having Ricky was great, and he was very nice to, here we had interviewed him a few months ago, and, here we are having to do it again. But a great guy. We've always loved Ricky, and, have a great time down there, John.
All right. Well, I appreciate it, Tom.
You got it, pal.
All right. And we'll be back hopefully in a couple weeks with another episode of Backstage with Burgoyne and Brage. Backstage with Burgoyne.